Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 80, Big Hero 6. Don't even compare it to Frozen.
Yes, hi, domo arigato. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I am your host, the guy from Karate Kid and every other martial arts epic. Actually, I'm just Mason Smith doing a horribly crafted Asian accent.
Racism stops now. Okay. Welcome, everybody, to the Animation Addicts Podcast. I'm Mason, and I'm here with my two lovely and awesome and talented co-hosts, Morgan Stradling and Chelsea Robson. And today, oh, thank you. I mean, you're welcome. You are talented.
You have to practice your voices because you are doing 100 animated voices, and there's still a few that you need to add.
There's still a few that we have to
throw in a Big Hero 6 character, I'm just saying. And you're just practicing.
But there's no old animated Asian guy character besides Splinter.
This is why you need to.
Oh, dude, I could knock out like four of them.
There you go.
Ah, Himoto Yoshi.
Anyway, Right, so I can do Stan Lee now also. Backward and front. But anyway, oh gosh. Can't already tell by now, this is going to be our super awesome Big Hero 6 episode. Yes, we are breaking the Rotoscopers' rules of not doing recent releases. But hey, we did it with Frozen. I think we did it with Wreck-It Ralph, and we've done it for a few Pixar releases.
That's
and
Brave,
so,
Monsters, yeah, like, I don't know Brave, why
Monsters
this
University.
Was a rule.
Clearly, there's a bias towards Pixar and Disney because, you know, How to Train Your Dragon 2 is off in the corner like, hey, man, how come you didn't do an episode about us?
Hey, man. What's up with that?
What's up with that? And
Book of Life's like, what's up?
Hey, ¿por qué no hagamos un podcast sobre nosotros?
I'm all about accents tonight. Yeah, so Big Hero 6 on the Animation Addicts Podcast, for those of you who are the uninitiated, our show is all about animation and how much we love animated films. And so, you know, you're listening to us, you can just picture us on a sofa, you know, discussing our favorite animated films or not so favorite animated films and discussing why we love them and, you know, discussing the truly awesome art form that is animation. And so this will be a real treat tonight, talking about Big Hero 6, which I saw Saturday. So I'm like super fresh coming out of the theater watching it.
Ah, you're full of opinions.
I'm full of opinions. I did not see an advanced screening or a test screening. And so I am. Once again, I represent the common people. Morgan, not so much. And so, yeah, I don't think it's necessary to even do a nerdy couch discussion or like a trivia game or anything. I think we should just jump right into this.
I would say fly right into this.
Fly right into this. Fly like.
Super jump.
Oh, super jump. Oh, my gosh.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Bra Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo Bros.
Good job.
Bravo. All right, let me get this straight. A man in a kabuki mask attacked you with an army of miniature flying robots.
Microbots? Baymax, tell him.
Yes, officer.
Microbots?
Yeah, he was controlling them telepathically with a neurocranial transmitter. Come on!
I am not fast.
Yeah, no kidding! Go, 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 go!
So Mr. Kabuki was using ESP to attack you and Balloon Man.
I know it sounds crazy,
kid. How about we call your parents and get them down here?
What?
Write your name and number down on this piece of paper and we can help.
We've got to catch that guy. But first, you're going to need some upgrades.
A lunatic in a mask just tried to kill us.
How cool is that? I mean, it's scary, obviously, but how cool?
Whoa. What's wrong with you?
Low battery.
You home, sweetie?
We jumped out a window.
Who's that?
We jumped out a window.
Hairy baby. Hairy baby.
All right. We're going to try to keep this as organized as possible, even though it's clear that we are super excited about this film for many reasons. And try to bear with us if we seem like we go off on tangents. But then again, tangents are sort of like our awesome specialty here on the Animation Addicts podcast.
They're basically our superpower.
Oh, tangent powers. Hey, didn't we already discuss if we were superheroes?
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
I don't think they were very cool powers. So maybe we should, instead of powers, we should switch to like technology or which
science.
Of the big six heroes we think we would be.
9/11.
Well, let's establish that right off the bat. If you were one of the big six heroes, which would you be? Like, if we're playing pretend, you know, we're like, hey, let's play Big Hero 6. And I'm like, I want to be Fred, which I would be. I want to be Fred. That's who I would be. I think I'm the most like him.
I think you would be Fred.
I think his, like, not power, but his, like, feature as a superhero is probably the best.
Yes.
Everyone has amazing technology. He's just like, I don't care about technology. I just want someone to turn me into a fire-breathing monster. But they say that's not real science. Well, it kind of isn't. So, yeah, I'm Fred. So which one are you guys?
Morgan would definitely be Wasabi.
What?
Just putting it out there.
No.
Yes.
Honey Lemon.
Ooh,
no.
A meat freak, huh? I think both of you secretly want to be Honey Lemon, and
well,
you're just volunteering each other to be Wasabi.
She's a super curled nerdy girl.
So I'm definitely not a go-go, so I don't know who I would be. I could be Hiro.
Hiro!
You could be Baymax.
Baymax,
because you
care
so
really
much about us, Chelsea.
Chelsea is a Baymax. She cares about others. Very sympathetic. And empathetic.
And I'm so huggable.
She is super huggable.
I wouldn't know because I've never hugged Chelsea.
I've never met you, Mason.
I don't think I've ever hugged Morgan. I think I've just handshook her once.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You're a missionary. That's the hug.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, awkward discussion on physical contact aside. So I'm Fred. We've got we're here with Honey Lemon and Baymax. So, Chelsea, you have to talk
Baymax
for the rest of the episode.
I am like Wasabi. Like when he was driving and he was putting his blinker on.
Oh, even if you're being chased by
That's totally me. Like if the road is curving because it naturally curves and it's going that way, I put my blinker on. I let people know. I'm curving. I'm turning.
I have a little bit of Wasabi in me too because when we drive to Austin to Shanna's parents' house, there's always a turn that's not really a turn that you have to make with a blinker, but I always turn my blinker on anyway.
I turn my blinker on when I'm going into my house.
Really?
And my husband hates like repetitive noises, so I put my blinker on all the time. It's, yeah.
Oh, man.
Basically, he's not a fan ever.
Oh.
He's like, we're in the left turn lane. Everyone's turning left. You don't, but I'm like, it's the law. These are fun discussions that we have.
It's the law.
He's Go-Go, and was obvious.
What does Go-Go say? She said, there's no law.
No, she's like, there's no stoplights in car chases.
Yeah.
Or no red lights.
All right. Okay, so how was y'all's theater experience? Because remember when we talked about our theater experience for Monsters University, and I like was kind of annoyed that there were so many screaming children at.
Yeah!
That was some of the best sound engineering ever for an episode.
It was pretty good.
All right, so when I went Saturday night, yeah, it was mostly high schoolers, young adults, like college age, and there were only a few younglings with their parents. And actually, the grown-ups were laughing more than the kids. And actually, there was this one lady up front. There was one lady up front who, like, couldn't contain herself the whole time. Basically, anytime Baymax was on screen, she would just bust out laughing, and she was uncurable. She was just hysterical throughout the whole movie. And it was kind of annoying because it made everyone else laugh, and it kind of broke the movie magic for us.
Aw, bummer. Yeah,
yes, mine, what about you guys?
Mine was, I went to a screening, and so it was on a Saturday because for the animated films, they do them on Saturday so you can bring your family, bring your kids. So it was a bunch of children. Actually, there was a lot of girls rather than, I thought there'd be a lot more boys there, but that was not the case. And it was just a normal screening, nothing too special. So
my screening was pretty awesome.
Oh, tell us more.
Oh, well, awesome. Here in Nashville, I was able to receive a whole stack of tickets for people to go, for fans of ours to go and see the screening. It was a Saturday morning as well. And so we had a contest on the Facebook, and we had a whole bunch of people, you know, basically it was like, what was your favorite podcast? And so we had a whole bunch of people like put out their names and say what it was, and they all won tickets. Yay!
Hey, all right. See how easy it is to win prizes from the Rotoscopers?
Yeah, you just have to
show
us
some love.
Everyone's a winner.
It's true.
Yeah!
You just have to live in a place where one of us actually is.
Right. It's very geographically precise. Restrictive.
But it was so cool because I met a lot of really, like, just some fans that have been fans for, like, some of them have been fans since, like, you know, Frozember, because that's when a lot of people jumped on the Rotoscopers train, let's just say that. And we're happy and love that you guys found us that way. But there was a couple people that were like, oh no, I was before that. And I was like, really? Whoa.
Holy cow.
Yeah, this girl named Tess, shout out to Tess. Yeah, she came with her dad, and so they're both just like, yeah, I've been listening to this forever. I'm like, that is so awesome. So yeah, it was really cool. Like, especially to be able to see it with other fans of the podcast and just, you know, it was just like, yeah, we're all here buddies and having a good time. So I thoroughly enjoyed my screening.
Wow. I had no idea that there were so many Rotoscopers fans like in Nashville. Did a lot of them travel, or a lot of them from that area, or what?
Yeah, there were a couple people like that were from the Nashville area, surrounding areas. Oh, and Lipscomb University had actually growing their animation department. And so I had gone to another, it was the Taught by the Pro conference weekend where they had a bunch of the animators, like, Claire Keene was there as well as.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was fun. And so I got to meet a lot of people there, and that's where a lot of people got tickets too.
Well, groovy.
Ooh, I want to say something. So this wasn't necessarily my experience with my screening, but I did have the opportunity to go to the premiere of Big Hero 6.
That's right.
Which we went to Frozen last year. And it's really fun to go to these because you get to see the behind the scenes and you get across the velvet rope, metaphorically. And so this one was completely different than the Frozen run. The Frozen had a white carpet instead of a red carpet, but we had a red carpet here because obviously red is a big color in Big Hero 6. It's basically the main color in the logo, and it's Baymax's color. And so yeah, we got there, and I was able to have a friend help me out and to do the camera. He's just actually lived a few blocks away. Well, he's a friend now. We never actually had met. I needed last minute, I needed a camera guy. Other one fell through. And so, I just reached out. There's something called Patreon, and it's kind of a way that you can support podcasts and content creators and YouTubers or whatnot, where you can pledge a monthly subscription, whatever you choose, whether it's $1, $5, $10, $25. And, there's different perks for doing that. And we are going to be doing a Patreon in the near future. We just haven't finalized everything. Woo. But I'm a patron of actually a podcast called Rob Has a Podcast. It's probably the number one podcast that I listen to. 90% of my podcasting time is spent listening to this show. So I'm a patron because if that show went away, I'd be really sad. So I pledge a certain amount of money every month and are part of a Facebook group with only the patrons. And so as I asked everybody I knew in LA for, see if they could help me, and no one could, you know, they had work. It was literally the day before and it was stressful. So I reached out to the patrons because I knew there's about 400 or 500 in the patron group. And so I just said, hey, this is a really like throwing, you know, a long shot here. But if anyone is in LA, I need help, just someone to help me, you know, just basically hold the camera while I go and do some interviews and cover the red carpet. And hey, the perks are you get to go behind the scenes at a big movie premiere, blah, blah, blah. And one guy, people were like, oh man, I wish I could, blah, 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 I wish I could get work off so no one could do it. And finally I was like, okay, I guess I'll just use the old tripod and make it work. Then one guy's like, hey, I live a few blocks away. And, yeah, so I met him. His name was Paul. He's actually a composer for a TV show. He's currently working on Scandal, and he's just a fellow patron.
My wife loves that show.
Well, he's one of the two composers. So small world. So anyways, Paul, shout out if you're listening to this. You are amazing and thank you so, so much. So anyways, back to the premiere. That's my little patron story. But so we got there early and you have about an hour to get set up. And we did some videos, which I've released on the YouTube. I've done all my interviews, but I'm in the process of kind of creating a, here's behind the scenes at the premiere, but I don't actually have that much footage. Some of it's blurry. So I'm kind of trying to figure out what's working. So you should see it soon at some time, but definitely the interviews are there. So we got there, we shot some videos, I took some pictures, which they're on our Instagram. You should definitely go check those out. And then, you know, people start arriving and you cover the red carpet. And so with the red carpet, a lot of people don't know that you don't, like, everyone who's on the list to attend, you don't interview everybody. The big stars have very select outlets like People.com, Entertainment Weekly, you know, the big ones, and their handlers take them to those, and you usually don't get those. But last year we spoke with the director and producer of Get a Horse, so I was kind of expecting to talk to them again. And this time there, at the very beginning, a bunch of Disney stars from, you know, Jake and the Neverland Pirates arrived early. And so someone was walking around with a sign with their names and basically saying, is anyone interested? And a lot of people were like, no. But I decided I wanted to take any chance, anyone that would talk to us, I wanted to talk to.
Yeah.
Plus it allowed me to kind of warm up for the main event. And so I interviewed Caitlin, who is on Doc McStuffin. She's Alma. And then another guy who is Finn in the Lego movie, and he's also in Jake and the Neverland Pirates. So I interviewed them. They're super cute. Then I also interviewed one of the screenwriters, Robert Baird, who was the screenwriter for Big Hero 6. And then I got to interview the producer and director of Feast. And that was probably my favorite interview of the whole night.
It was a really
I'll include
really
those
good
links
one.
In the show notes to that playlist so you can just watch them. But really, really cool. So I was really excited that I got to interview them. And I'd seen the short beforehand. So that was great. And then, you know, at the very end, it started wrapping up. It was running late. So they, you know, it's over basically when they do the big cast photo at the end. And those were the last people we had talked to. But then TJ Miller was actually staying after and doing interviews with everybody, like just one or two questions sort of thing. And that's what Kristen Bell did last year. She stayed after the premiere had officially, you know, started and they'd all gone inside. And so we have a little mini interview with TJ Miller, and we kind of shared the screen with Disney Examiner. They're another Disney site. Really, really cool guys there. So yeah, that was my experience. It was so fun. Hopefully we're going to be able to do lots more of these in the future, especially if, a certain Rotoscopers member might be in LA for the next summer. Who knows?
Hey, we'll see.
We shall see. So yeah, get ready for more of those because they're really fun. So anyways, that's my experience in the Big Hero 6 premiere. I got to see Monsieur Lasseter, the day before the big Ooh. Toy Story 4 announcement. So he was, had something up his sleeve. I mean, he just wanted to outdo Big Hero 6. He's like, Big Hero 6 premiere, the next day, Toy Story 4. So we will talk about Toy Story 4 on another episode.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So yeah, that's my experience. So I am excited to get into the movie.
Holy cow. Folks, I'm sorry if I hit any low notes too early, but what were your general impressions of the film, guys?
Oh, I loved it.
In brief.
No, I...
Chelsea loved it.
Yeah, you can see from my YouTube review, like, there was very little, if anything, that I would be able to improve upon. I felt like everything was just really, really well done. I gave it 5 stars, and I'm sticking by that.
Hmm. Wow.
Wow.
See, I really liked it. I felt that... there were certain parts that didn't really work for me, and there were obvious some plot holes. But I liked it. I left really happy. I was laughing. It was just really good, really, really good movie. And, I think I originally gave it 4.5 stars. I'm sort of teetering right now between 4 and 4.5. So by the end of this, maybe I'll have my final call. But I thought the ensemble cast as a whole was great. I really liked the way they played off each other. I was kind of disappointed that there were certain characters that I wanted more of. Like, I wanted more Tadashi. I wanted more time with him.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk about that in a second. But then I also kind of wanted a little teeny bit more development of the other characters. I was really interested in them, and they were just ancillary. It was really the Hero Baymax movie. So, you know, I'm not going to lie. I'm interested for a – hold on. My dog is freaking out. I'm interested in a sequel because I would like to see those characters fleshed out a little more, or maybe a TV show.
All right. Well, cool. Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. I thought it looked beautiful, and the technology and the, you know, I guess the animation techniques that they pulled off were just gorgeous. And then, I had a few problems with the story, but overall it was an enjoyable film. I thought it was really good. Well, Morgan just talked a bunch about the premiere, so I feel like I get to talk a bunch now. Okay. That came out wrong. Okay. So I mentioned girls talk too much, Peter Pan. Anyway. I don't really think that. Anyway, well, I just mentioned that I really loved, like, the visuals of the film and the animation. So let's go into that a little bit more, because I think as an animation student, I knew a little bit about this, but I feel like general audiences might not, and therefore they might not appreciate it. So here we go. So one of the things that really blew me away when I first saw it was San Francisco, the city. I think it's like literally an animation marvel, because I don't think Disney's done anything like that before. What did y'all think about San Francisco?
So I loved San Francisco. One thing that was interesting is that it was very realistic, and that was something that was able to be done because of the new renderer that they used in this movie, which was for the first time ever, the Hyperion renderer, but which I believe you are going to go into and talk about a little more. But one thing, like, this, it felt so real and deep, and that I didn't really even notice the background so much. Is that weird? Like, I think they were just so good, I didn't focus on them. Except for, like, the big ones, when obviously you're going over the bridge, like, you know, or you're flying over the island. Other than that, like, within the city, I didn't really I don't, well, I did, but I didn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not very helpful.
Well, no, I think you brought up a good point that that the city of San Francisco, like the environment, it blended well with everything else. It didn't like stand out as something like wacky or crazy, like on Meet the Robinsons. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That like city off in the distance that's just like, whoa, it's just way far out there. But then again, that's Meet the Robinsons. Yeah. San Francisco was like a living, breathing city that like, that was its own world, you know?
Did you guys, okay, here's one thing that I really liked. At the very beginning, when it like kind of like sweeps in from the ocean up into the city, if you're looking at the city in like certain lights, the skyscrapers are shaped somewhat like a castle. Like if you just kind of take an outline of it, it kind of looks like it's supposed to be the Disney castle. And I really appreciated things like that, where it's like, oh yeah, let's just kind of make this all look something really cool.
Yeah, that is exactly the vibe that I got. I felt like the opening shot when you kind of fly into San Francisco, it was like a mirrored shot of that, the Disney intro, sequence where you like fly past the castle across a bridge and there's like a pirate ship and there's like fireworks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I felt like it was probably a homage to that. And then, I'm pretty sure that San Francisco was, its appearance was modeled after the actual San Francisco, but they exaggerated a few things and obviously added, you know, giant blimps and stuff like that. So, I mean, obviously the name.
So what was your favorite part about the landscape?
Well, like I said, I felt like it integrated well with everything to where it didn't like stand out. It just felt like a part of the universe that was created in the film. Also, I liked that it was, it wasn't this like pastoral, like idyllic, you know, shining Disney city, you know? It's not like all those animated films. It's like, oh, it's New York. It's like this idyllic city where dreams come true and it's all shining and gleaming, you know? San Francisco had like some grit to it, you know? And it had all those cool signs, you know, very heavy on like the J-pop like culture. You got the giant, you know, giant like displays and neon signs that you would imagine being in Tokyo or Hong Kong or someplace like that. So I'm going to get into a little bit of technical mumbo jumbo. You guys okay with hearing technical mumbo jumbo?
Woohoo!
I guess.
All right.
My favorite part.
It's like a 75% approval rating. Hey, why the Thunder 2%?
I don't know.
Never know when the Thunder 2%
is. Is that like a rim shot? It's like a rim shot. All right, technical mumbo jumbo with Mason. So San Francisco is made up of 83,000 procedurally generated buildings. So that means that it's not like the animators went in and modeled everything by hand. They made a computer algorithm or a function in the computer that basically built it for them. And then when they got what they wanted, they were like, okay, so be it. This is San Francisco. And then like, you know, texturing and lighting and stuff is a lot more complicated. But there's over 216,000 streetlights and over 100,000 vehicles, not to mention thousands of crowd extras. And like Morgan hinted at earlier, this is all made possible with the Hyperion engine, and that's the technical star of the show. Okay, so remember when we talked about Monsters University, how amazing like the lighting was, how realistic it looked?
Yes.
That was called global illumination, and like in super layman's terms, it basically means that the computer is simulating a ton of light rays that are bouncing and refracting and reflecting off of surfaces and stuff. It's global illumination is like the term for really realistic lighting. It takes up way too much computer memory. Not until the masterminds at Pixar made Monsters University, and now it's used for entire animated feature films. There was I think it was called Torch is the program that DreamWorks uses, and not a Hyperion image engine. But basically, Hyperion, it found it's a really efficient way of calculating light rays. It's like as if you defragmented your hard drive and you got rid of all those like unnecessary gaps before you worked on your computer. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that what they did. AKA what Disney did was it found a really smart way to build on existing render technology without reinventing the wheel. And I just now finished like the last page of Creativity Incorporated, and that sounds like a cat mole phrase, you know, or something that he would strive for, or something like that he mentioned in the book. So it made me think of that.
Love that book.
So the result is the Hyperion engine. It's a 55,000 core render farm. So like my laptop has like 4 cores in it. So their render farm has like 55,000. And it's, in a render farm, if you don't know, it's a supercomputer that does the calculations to actually like render out, like actually draw out every frame you know, with all the animation and all the lighting and all the crazy surfacing that you've got going on. And Hyperion is actually a cloud spread across four physical render farm sites. And it's got, it uses 400 terabytes of memory. It's a buttload.
Holy cow.
Oh my gosh.
And here's the crazy part. It uses about 1.5 megawatts of power, which is kind of a funny thing because 1.5 megawatts of power is the output of one of those mechanical windmill things that you see, you know.
Uh-huh.
The Hyperion engine, you know, with that amount of power, it can pretty much power about 332 households simultaneously for an entire year. But it's also surprisingly economic because it's like, you know, just one of those windmills isn't that big of a deal. But at the same time, it is really powerful.
Yeah.
So I can't tell if it's like super powerful or powerful but also economic. I don't know. I'm not like an expert on those things. But this I can understand. It outputs over 1 million render hours a day. And the chief technical officer at Disney stated that the Hyperion engine can render the movie Tangled from scratch once every 10 days.
Whoa.
And it did not take 10 days to render out Tangled when they first made it.
No.
I can tell you that.
Technology.
And so Hyperion is also responsible for, I still love technology. Yeah. So Hyperion engine also allowed the rendering of all those freaking microbots that we see in the film. Like just amazing capabilities. So the bottom line is the film really looks beautiful thanks to Hyperion. And that's kind of why I explained all this, because unfortunately I don't think general audiences will catch on to that. I think they'll probably overlook the film's technical achievements. So I really think they're worth mentioning.
Well, thank you very much.
I feel so much more initiated at this point.
And with that, Mason, we are done with you.
Go back into your corner.
Okay, I'll go home.
Just kidding. Okay, so we are really only a few days into the lifespan of Big Hero 6, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the box office because it had quite an impressive box office run for its opening weekend. It actually was number one in the box office. Yeah. Big hooray. It actually beat out Interstellar, which is a Christopher Nolan film. And, you know, they were kind of both expected to do well, but I think Interstellar was expected to do slightly better. And so the fact that it beat it out is like, booyah! So Big Hero 6 made $56.2 million and Interstellar only made $47.5. Gone Girl, which is still hanging around, made $6 million. So huge differential and gap between the 1 and 2 and 3. So this was basically the only two movies that people were seeing this weekend. And a lot of people I know saw Big Hero 6. My mom saw it and she was like, it was so good. And yeah, I'm really, really excited. I think it opened kind of between Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen. Frozen, I think, made around 70-ish, and Wreck-It Ralph was in the 40s. And it's probably, it's expected to do between those. Obviously, no one's expecting this to be the next Frozen, but it's expected to do better than Wreck-It Ralph. So the minimum, it's going to make $200 million. I'm predicting probably, I would love to see it make $300 million or more, U.S. or, not U.S. Yeah, yeah, domestic and international, obviously, it's just going to be, I don't know. Through the roof, basically. Yeah, I'd love to see it be seven or plus, seven higher.
Ooh.
So seven, not seven, just seven, 700 million.
High eight.
Eight? So, okay. So let's go into the film. We've kind of been just like dancing around it and talking about little bits and pieces, but let's get into the meat of Big Hero 6.
Ooh, I love the meat. I thought the film had a really good exposition, you know, where you kind of open everything up. It was very extended. I did not expect it to be, you know, the time from, okay, spoiler alert, I guess.
Of course.
From the opening shot to when Hero loses his brother. It was quite some time.
Yeah.
Because it had a lot to introduce because, you know, new universe, new world and everything. But I also liked it because I just liked the fact that it really took its time with the exposition.
See, I kind of disagree. I felt that this first act was super fast.
Really?
I thought that we just went from like, oh, BattleBots. Okay, now we're at the school. Okay, now we're speed lapsing and we're creating my science project. Okay, now we're here. Now we're competing. Oh, now he's dead.
Like, he also went to jail.
Yes.
Both of them did.
I don't know. From my perspective, I felt that maybe it was because the, you know, we knew from the trailers that Tadashi was going to die and it was going to be very early on. So I was kind of just like not necessarily looking forward to that moment, but expecting it. And I just felt like everything was super rushed at the beginning. But most other people seem to disagree with me on that. It's like Mason.
Yeah. I felt like it was pretty extended.
For me, like there's the only, okay. I guess there are a couple things that I was like, I wish that was a little bit differently. I kind of felt like the beginning did have a few spots of like the exposition as far as like the dialogue was just kind of very
expected.
Yeah. It's like, you know how Aunt Cass, she's, you know, what she would say, what would your parents say? You know, it's just like, you know how
they're dead, you know,
right.
You know, I never met them. Yeah. I felt that during that interaction between Tadashi and Hiro was,
they kind of rushed through introducing everything.
No, but yeah, it just felt like trite. It just felt kind of like
cheesy.
That had been done before. Like, oh, like, you know, my parents are dead. So I'm going to say, I've never met my parents, or whatever he said. That was kind of that typical response.
And I think that was one of those things that I was like, okay, they really could have taken those and taken more of like a,
show you don't tell you.
Yeah. Show you don't tell you. Cause I felt like the whole thing was a tell you. So I guess, dang it. Now I can't keep my 5-star review now, but it's okay.
Yes,
but,
you can.
Yeah. I still give it at 5 stars. Just be, well, dang it, I can't with good measure. But it's okay.
Well, let's keep talking. Let's keep talking, and then we'll decide at the end of the episode.
Okay.
Let's talk about the BattleBots.
Oh, BattleBots was awesome. Who was the big fat guy that he was fighting against?
I don't know. He's in the art book.
Yama.
Mm-hmm.
I am the great Yama.
He's so
like, gross. Oh, I have more money.
He's like, great, I'm going to hustle this kid. I thought it was funny. It reminded me of,
Fresh Prince. Please say Fresh Prince.
No. What? Is there a Yama in Fresh Prince?
Yeah. No, in Fresh Prince, there's an episode where Uncle Phil totally acts like he can't play pool, and he totally hustles these dudes and gets all of Will Smith's money back.
Oh, that's funny.
I remember that. Oh, good times.
That's pretty good. All right, well, Fresh Prince aside, I really liked BattleBots. I thought, I don't know, I liked the little thing with Yama. And I like that they introduce Hiro as kind of this rebel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they do eventually introduce him as this kind of like, nah, I don't want to do anything with my life. I just want to build robots, make money.
Washed up.
You know? And they take that a little too far, and I'll talk about that later. But I don't know, I like how that first scene flows, you know. He's about to get beat up by Yama, and then Tadashi shows up in the nick of time. He's like, get on, you idiot. And they have like a mini chase scene, so that's cool.
No, I loved the BattleBot scene. I just thought it was really cool. I loved how they just set him up as this little schemer, you know, who's smarter than he leads on. You know, super smart with this BattleBot that just looks like a tinker toy. And then we're introduced to Tadashi saving the day, which he's really set up as the hero from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Hero's hero, right?
Yeah.
Aw, hero's hero.
Hero. I love Tadashi. He was so good.
Oh, Tadashi's such a great guy.
Like, throughout the whole thing, he was just, I mentioned this in my YouTube review, but it's just, I felt like he was just a whole person. Like, he wasn't trying to be anybody else. He wasn't trying to impress anybody. He was just like, nothing was about him. And that's something that's so endearing and like very difficult to find and even more difficult to be. So yeah. I like people like that.
Yeah, I like it. I thought that he was, I don't know. I thought he was the most heartwarming guy. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the most real, the most heartwarming guy at the beginning that doesn't necessarily have a very strong personality. Well, you know, he's going to die in the exposition.
Oh, that was a bad part though. Like,
and
as I'm watching this and I knew that he was going to die because I'd seen the Japanese trailer for it. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, the moment I started to like him, I just got so sad. It's like, I was just expecting it. I'm like, no.
See, with Tadashi, like, as this whole time, you know, you think of a basically, like, this perfect character, this one that someone looks up to dying, I think, of the Lion King. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, I felt that it didn't, and I'm not trying to compare it to the Lion King. I really do like this movie, but we're just talking critically here, right? And I felt like with the Lion King, we grew, even though I love Tadashi, I think he's amazing, I think we grew to love Mufasa more. Because yeah. Mufasa, there's like two or three big moments between them. So there's the one with, on Pride Rock, kind of showing him the lay of the land, and then he saves him from the hyenas, and then he gives them the talking to, and then they, you know, kiss and make up, and they're playing, and he's just a great dad. And I think this may have just been because they spoiled that he was going to die very early, so I knew it was happening, so I couldn't become as attached to him. But I just didn't feel there were too many moments that really, really solidified their bond. Obviously, the very beginning when he saves him, you know, gets him out of that tight situation, and then he's super supportive of him at the science fair. And
yeah.
I don't know, there are actually quite a few, but
I felt like at the end it added a lot more to it, though. The fact that he was like, oh, I can't wait till Hiro sees this. Like, oh man, like even in those moments where he's just like by himself, just like thinking out loud, it's like even that will bring, like, it endears you to him a little bit more. And the relationship, you know, between Hiro and Tadashi, it's just like, okay, like these guys had a really good brothership, and I think that they could have expanded on that and like could have added, showed you, not told you a couple, things. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they get, so obviously they don't have parents because it's a Disney film, and Maya Rudolph is their Aunt Cass. And, I thought she was cute for like what she was. I think she was just kind of like a general silly character, you know, that everybody needs. And, I don't know. It was very Gilmore Girls, how she like ran her own like restaurant. Was that a motel or anything?
I've never seen Gilmore Girls, so
watched Gilmore Girls?
No.
What?
Is that horrible?
Whoa.
Awkward.
What kind of woman are you? I mean, you've never watched Gilmore Girls?
No.
Seventh Heaven,
yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, there's one ABC Family show that you can knock off your list and that fills that.
I guess, isn't Gilmore Girls on Netflix now? And so I guess
it is. You can,
I can check it out.
I was totally obsessed with it.
I'm not, but I've overheard / was forced to watch several thousand episodes of it. All right. So anyway, Aunt Cass, she was just kind of, I think her best scene was when she was like sitting down with the cat watching the suspenseful film. She's like totally engrossed in it. Okay. So the whole exposition where we're introduced to a lot of stuff. There's the guy from Craytech.
Alistair Cray.
Yeah, Alistair Cray. Professor Callahan. So, all right, we'll talk about the villain later, but I don't know. Disney fooled me and made me think it was Cray at the beginning. After all, you tried to steal his microbot.
Yes. Yes.
Know? See, I was expecting something like that.
Especially after the, you know, bait and switch with Hans.
Yeah.
I know. Franz.
Franz.
Like to pump you up, Anna.
I actually expected him. I was like, no, the fact that this is the guy from Babe.
James Cromwell.
Yeah. The fact that this is the guy from, you know, That'll Do Pig, for whatever reason, that just makes me feel like, yes. And Alan Tudyk is the Alistair Cray. And so I'm like, he's going to play the bait and switch guy. Like the fact that he's been so many villains, he's going to be the bait and switch guy. That's just what's going to happen.
But this was like a bait and switch bait. I don't know. It was like, yeah. Well, there's a guy that everybody thinks it is, but it's not, but he's still kind of a bad guy. But the guy that we thought it was, I don't know. To me, it was like less exciting that it was Callahan and not anybody else. I thought it was Tadashi. I was going with everyone's internet.
You're looking for like a Lex Luthor thing, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. We'll get into that. My gosh. But yeah. Okay. So we're introduced to all that. It wasn't as much of a out of nowhere villain reveal as Hans, you know.
Yeah.
But they still got me at the beginning. So yeah, Tragic Fire. The microbot scared me. And at this point, after Tadashi dies and what Hiro does for the rest of the film, I guess this is my main point about the story that I really don't like. Let me know if you guys agree with this. Okay, so he goes to the robotics department with Tadashi. He's like, oh, what is this? This is dumb. And he's like, oh,
Nerd school.
Robots. Nerd school is cool. Oh, everybody's friendly. Whoa. I was like, hey, what is it? You make your own ball bearings? Yeah, make them in-house. So he enjoys, you know, he's totally into this, and he was basically made for this program.
Yeah.
And I really liked that film because while I don't think it is 100% the case for everyone, I highly value higher education. Like, Tadashi would have done a lot more good getting his degree, and I totally caught the spirit of how robotics can help improve the world, unless you get into Skynet and you get into my Terminator side. So there's a balance there. And that's what I thought that part of the movie was about. It was like, hey, look at all these really cool cats who go to college and are getting their degree in robotics. You know, why throw your life away making a bunch of cash? And then Hero's like, I'm going to go, you know, and he's like Mike Wazowski, you know, I'm going to be the best scarer ever. And so he does the competition and things go horrible. For one, I was really impressed that I thought it was really cool how, Gogo and Wasabi, Honey Lemon, not so much Fred, they had their own projects that they were making, and they were kind of pushing the limits and the boundaries with their own projects. So I was like, that's cool. That's kind of what your master's degree would probably be like. And then Hero comes along and he makes these scary, crazy, cool microbots that can just do whatever he wants.
And he's 14.
And he's 14. And then after that, they don't do anything further with the robotics school. Like, he never sets foot in the classroom.
Yeah. That kind of went with his depression that he, like, because that was the place where Tadashi died, he wanted to distance himself from it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can understand that. When I first saw him walking around that robotics department, it reminded me of the Three Musketeers with, oh, gosh, what's the kid's name? D'Artagnan?
I have no idea.
D'Artagnan. Yeah. D'Artagnan, the main character, and the Three Musketeers. Because he's like the fourth Musketeer. He's like an outcast at first, and then he kind of gains their trust and stuff. So I kind of expected to be that kind of relationship. And then I really expected a mentor relationship with Callahan, which would have really solidified the irony and the conflict with him ending up being the villain. But he never sets foot in the university again. And after that, it's like Heroes is just clearly the superior one of the group. He makes all their technology for them. And the focus shifts to him and Baymax, and everyone else is kind of an afterthought.
Yeah. Makes me think that maybe they killed off Tadashi too soon.
Yeah, maybe.
It would have been cool to see him start school, really, you know, maybe even that montage where he was building his project in. Why'd he have to do it in his garage? It would have been better having him do it at the school. I mean, that he's not a...
He wasn't a student yet.
He wasn't a student. I mean, maybe he should have just been accepted into the program and they were all competing for...
Yeah,
instead of competing to be in, maybe they were competing for a big prize.
Right.
And that way we could see Callahan and him building these microbots working together, which makes it even worse because then you would see Callahan, like, his secrets.
Then it would just be devastating.
I agree. That's a good point.
So, and he...
They also... Because
here we are going to the villain when...
Wait. Because they did it all in fast motion right there, like, you saw the group of people come in, and so you could see, during this process, he did make friends with them. They were, like, kind of more thing. But you still... I do wish that I would have seen more of that.
Yeah, because when Baymax later calls, like, a distress signal, and they all just roll up super excited, you don't feel that you don't feel the bond, because the bond was always, like, with the two of them with Tadashi, and then Tashi was gone. We never saw... I mean, you can assume they're still friends. They're not going to just drop this kid.
Well, yeah, they're nice people.
Yeah. But the way they were acting toward him, like, they'd been friends with him forever. You know, he was a legitimate part of the group, but it just wasn't quite translated.
Yeah, so that was one of the big problems that I had with this film, and that one problem kind of affects the whole film for me. But now we're talking about the other characters, so I think, we have to talk about Baymax. Do we talk about Baymax first, or the other four?
Let's talk about the heroes. Let's talk about the heroes, and then Baymax.
Okay, so there's the other heroes. We got Gogo Tamago, Honey Lemon, Wasabi, and Fred in that order, I think, is how we meet them. Mm-hmm. So Gogo,
no,
I actually
then Wasabi, then Honey Lemon, then Fred.
Oh yeah, you're right. I expected Gogo to be a little more a little more of a thing. You know, it's clear that a popularity shifted to Honey Lemon, probably after test screenings or something like that.
Uh huh. What do you mean that they?
I don't know. I felt like
they kind of diminished the importance of her character.
Oh, I thought that besides being like kind of a clone of Wild Style from the Lego movie, I felt like Go-Go was just kind of like, I'm the tough girl, I have a bad attitude, but I still have capacity for love, and I have about five lines, mm-hmm. you know? And then yeah. Honey Lemon, she was super popular. I felt like there was a huge focus on her.
Mm-hmm. I loved her because she was cute and she was adorable and she was just yeah. real. I mean, she had top bun on her head and her hair was down sometimes, and then she was wearing really tall heels just because, even though she's the tallest girl around, she doesn't care. She's still going to yeah. wear high heels. And she was kind of like the mother of the group. She was really loving and kind of made sure everything was in order, while yeah. Go-Go wasn't so much. And so I think you kind of are drawn maybe to characters more than that, but more like that. But yeah. Yeah,
I will admit that Honey Lemon was like more multidimensional for what it's worth. I mean, I don't think the whole group was very multidimensional, but I found Honey Lemon to be more interesting. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
And then Wasabi. Wasabi's cute. Who did his voice? Is that guy from New Girl?
Damon Wayans. Damon Wayans Jr.
Yeah. So he's pretty popular these days. I thought his character was pretty funny.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. I loved how neurotic he was.
Despite being big and bulky.
The tension between him and Go-Go, because Go-Go was kind of like fast-paced, just didn't care. Yeah, I'm going to steal this, thanks. And he was like, ah, no.
Everything has its place.
Yes.
It's a system. I like his quote. Wow, yeah, we all have our nicknames around here. I spill wasabi on my shirt one time, people.
What's his real name?
Ooh,
that is probably a question.
No ginger.
I think it was a good thing that they, because it used to be Go-Go Tamago, Honey Lemon, Wasabi Ginger, and then Fred. And I think it was actually kind of a good thing that they just cut the names just to Go-Go and Wasabi, just mm-hmm. to make it a little bit more tangible. Honey Lemon makes sense. I guess you could just call her Honey if you wanted
but
to.
But that kind of, I don't know. Honey Lemon is kind of a more quirky, kind of more granola mm-hmm. name.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
for her character.
Definitely.
And then there's Fred.
Oh.
He's the only one who doesn't have this amazing, like, Japanese sounding name.
He's the squatter. Campus squatter.
Is he even a student? How does he know these people?
He doesn't even go here.
Yeah, he's not a student, but somehow he's like a mascot by day and by night. A mascot.
Oh, yeah, he is the mascot.
So he was great.
He is my favorite. He's my favorite. Maybe it's just like the outcast character. He's like the Shaggy, you know,
mm-hmm.
of the group. He's like the Zoinks, you know.
And I'm surprised that they actually want to be friends with him.
I know, because he's kind of a slob. I mean, he doesn't do his laundry.
Ew, nasty.
Yeah. Also, he seems to have the most fun out of everyone, and he seems to be the most, like, optimistic. Like, nothing really seems to get him down.
That's why they keep him around.
I guess so.
We need fun people in our lives.
I love that he was the loaded one of the group.
Right.
Yeah. It looks like he's a bum, you know, and you're not quite sure whose couch he's living on.
You live under a bridge.
I loved, Morgan, I loved in your YouTube video when you're just like, yeah. Be nice to everyone. You never know.
You never know.
Be nice to everyone because you never know when you're going to meet your Fred. Yeah. And the son of Stan Lee. We have a lot to talk about, son.
It was just too good.
I know. Let's just jump to that. What did y'all think of the post-credit scene?
Amazing.
Oh, worth every
staying
moment.
Till the end.
What is it? What does it have to? What are those suits for? Like, I didn't get what heroes.
He's just a superhero. He's just some sort of superhero.
So what are they going to
have a name, but
Captain Underpants. Oh wait, that's already taken. yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. And we were sitting there and we were all like, "Hey, Stan Lee's got to be in this movie." Oh, there he is in the painting. But we weren't expecting so much. We weren't expecting him to like have a, like a huge cameo as an animated character.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool. That was cool. I love Fred's pad. It's like super nice. He has all these like replica and like original like action figures and comics and stuff. And so
right
he,
up your alley, Mason. That's yeah.
like, I know. And it's like his reference material for all of his decisions. He's like, no, check it out. This evil villain was a super industrialist guy. This guy was a corporation executive.
Well, if you think about it, it totally makes sense that he has every copy of every, you know, comic book ever because his dad is Stan Lee.
Yeah. Also, he seems like super tickled. He seems like super tickled that he's like in his own comic book story. You know, it's like, all right, our first landing as a team.
Oh, he was so good.
You know, he did it well without being annoying like Mr. Prickle Pants in Toy Story of Terror, you know?
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. But there wasn't enough of them.
No, I need a TV show. I need a short of Fred. I need a sequel. He is the breakout character of all of them. He's great.
There's so much material they could get out of this. I feel like they only reached the tip of the iceberg with them.
Do you think they thought or knew how successful he would be as a character? Like, do you think that they didn't order enough Fred merchandise, just like how last year they didn't order enough Elsa because they thought Anna was going to be the star, and it turned out they loved Elsa.
Oh, those poor Disney executives. Yeah, I don't know. I think it was TJ Miller's voice. Because I'm looking at the cast. You've got, we'll get into Baymax in a second. I don't know who Ryan Potter is. I don't know who
Ryan Potter,
Penny is.
Yeah.
I don't know who, I kind of know who Jamie Chung is. And mm-hmm. I kind of know who Damon Wayans Jr. is. And I don't know who Genesis Rodriguez is.
Yeah. It's really not a star-studded cast that you would expect. Like, they are stars, but they're not stars. It's not like Rio 2 with Anne Hathaway and, you know, just some of these movies where it's all about the big name. Like, these aren't really big, huge names, which I loved because I wasn't focusing on their voice.
Do you think it's just because Disney can get away with that? Now that they've kind of now that they're on like a kind of an upswing, they can get away with not having big names?
I think so. I think they don't need Johnny Depp being the main character. Mm-hmm. Unless it's a role written for him. You know, they don't need this anymore because they can just focus on who is the best voice. Like TJ Miller, I had no idea who he was. I love this guy now. And I know he's kind of a big name, but
I remember him from How to Train Your Dragon because he's tough. In that.
But they just kind of cast the best person for the role, and this movie is so successful as a result.
Yeah. Well, I think Fred's character was super triumphant. Like, I really think he emerged as like a breakout character, like you said.
When I was interviewing Fred, Fred was hilarious TJ Miller was hilarious because he had Mickey Mouse gloves on.
Yeah.
Just because.
I'm seeing the photo right now of him on IMDb. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then he had a little action figure of Fredzilla in his pocket. And I'm like, you are amazing. Like, you're that classic, like, just the goofy character the goofy friend you know from high school who just...
He had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and he's still having fun. You know, you can tell he's a fun guy, so...
That's good. Yeah, ultimately, I was quite disappointed in how little we, like, know about Go-Go, Honey Lemon, Wasabi, and Fred.
I agree.
You know? Is there some tragic backstory to one of them? Or, you know, what... what's that quote from Rita Skeeter? What something something lie behind those? I forget what she says.
Oh.
Yeah. Besides Fred after the credit scene, which reveals a little bit about his history and about his character, like, I don't know what makes Go-Go so
fast.
So gruff and fast-paced, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know what makes Honey Lemon so happy or what, you know, what secrets she's hiding or what. I don't know
it's
why Wasabi
is
such a neat freak. I guess so.
I don't think so. Like, I know they've announced that her character was, like, in an interview, they said her character was Hispanic, but I don't think that...
I didn't see that.
No,
yeah,
I didn't
know, because... People, you weren't listening to the soundtrack. So, right as she, like, first comes around, she's got headphones in, and then she pulls them out, and right then, they have the song Dulce Boca Dulce come out, and it's a pretty, like, standard... you know, South American song. Like, basically, it's he's from Argentina. No, not from Argentina. He's Venezuela. And, like, it's a really fun song, anyway.
I guess. You don't have to be Hispanic to listen to...
It's true. It's very, very, very true.
But why would they do that?
But, yeah, that's one of those
weird
things that they, like, throw in there. It's like...
See, now, I know what you're going to say about her, the way she said hero.
Mm-hmm. Hero!
I thought that was, in Latin America, you say foto like that.
I thought it was because she was trying to say it with more of a Japanese accent, which would both
be
true.
Culturally sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Like, she wanted to pronounce Hiro's name the correct way, Hiro, instead of Hiro or whatever.
Hiro.
Or the Mason way.
Should have been a redneck.
He got that hero.
I'm working on these robots here.
Did you say robot?
Robots. Yeah, that's a pretty good idea. A robot. Anyway. Yeah, so definitely not enough of them. You know what there was plenty of, though, was a Baymax.
Baymax.
First thing I have to say is that Scott Adsit was a, like, huge surprise. I did not know it was the guy from 30 Rock that no one likes.
I don't know who that is.
That's because you've never watched 30 Rock because you're crazy for not watching it.
I know. You've told me many times that I would be so good for that show.
Do you ever learn?
The only thing I knew him from was actually from the Italian Job. He's the actor who's like in the car and he's like, crush thing. You did it. He's like trying to be a cop or something like that. Put your hands on your head. Crush. And it's like practicing in the car. And then right behind it, you've got Handsome Rob. And he's like, hi, it's Grain.
I'm Handsome Rob.
Yeah. So like that's the part that I remembered him from. I was like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah, he's the guy from the Italian Job. Okay, I remember that guy now. All right. But holy cow. Baymax. He was very – okay. Let me just say this. Every scene that hadn't been already overplayed in the trailers and in like commercials and stuff, like disregard all that, but all of his stuff was really cute and really funny, man. He had the audience rolling in the aisles more than anyone else. The whole like fist bump thing, how he just doesn't get it, the part at the end, it generated the most laughs, definitely. But it was just hilarious. That's the part where I busted out laughing. And I tend to be like pretty critical about the like the lovable sidekick and how they really overexpose them. But you can't hate Baymax. They created a lovable sidekick character that turned from a side character to a huge part of the main character. But they managed to they didn't polarize audiences with them. It wasn't like with Olaf where like half the people think he's adorable, but half of the audience thinks that they hate him and they just want to beat him on the head with a 2x4. But you could never take a 2x4 to Baymax.
No, he's too squishy.
He's 2x4 proof. I mean, it's just too squishy. Yeah. And,
it's going
they
for that
created
lovable,
such a
lovable feel.
And he's so simple, and yet he's got a little complexity to him. He's got some quirks, like when his battery runs low, he turns into a kind of drunk Baymax.
That was really well played.
Healthcare. Okay. But yeah, I really liked that part. And then,
we jumped out the window.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and so, I don't know, such an interesting character. And he really broke the mold because... speaking of the nitty gritty of animation, there's something that's called overlapping action where your character is animated to do multiple things at once, like how we do. You know, you raise your hand and there's several rotations that have to happen at once to make it look natural. But with Baymax at the very beginning, he was very robotic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He'd look at his target, walk towards it, hit something, look down at that, you know, manipulate that, look back straight forward, look back at Hero, walk towards him. And then talk, you know?
Yeah.
And he kind of lost that because he turned more into an action hero the way Hero wanted him to be.
Yeah.
But I really liked they really seemed to pay attention to this character. And I loved and hated that because on the one hand, you created an unforgettable Disney character that they will be making merchandise for for 20 years after this and beyond. But at the same time, his presence really diminished the rest of the team and made them kind of an afterthought, like I said. What do you say to that?
I feel like this one is a great first movie. And then the next movies, they can just go on and they can build on it and they can actually go in and create more stories for them. So I'm okay with them focusing on a single character.
It was an origin story.
Yeah.
It's hard to do a superhero film, just a one-off, you know, is what I'm realizing, especially a gang of people. I don't feel like this movie was intended to be a sequel franchise, but, you know, when they first came up with the idea, I don't think that was their intention at all. But I think as they were developing it, they specifically chose to focus on certain characters because you just can't focus on them all. And well, if it does well, we can focus on them in a sequel, which they 100% will do. That's why I'm so pumped for this sequel beyond anything else, because I just can imagine just how much they're going to focus on Honey Lemon. We're going to see more Musabi and Fred. And I'm so excited for this. Like, even if it's a TV show, I would watch that. And I usually don't watch too many animated TV shows nowadays just because I'm really busy. But I would be all hands on deck for this. And I can't believe I'm saying, like, that was the one thing that when I left the theater, I thought, when is the sequel going to be announced? Because this is really good. Like, this, this needs a sequel opposed to Wreck-It Ralph, which supposedly is like maybe getting a sequel. Like, Frozen doesn't need a sequel and Wreck-It Ralph doesn't need a sequel. Nope. But this does, which is so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it, well, definitely because it's a superhero movie, you're totally right about that. It is the tradition of Marvel films to make sequels, and people kind of, instead of rolling their eyes at it, they get excited. And I wonder why the public has that kind of reaction for a superhero, so for superhero movies, but not for, like, say, Frozen, because I was rolling my eyes when they were talking about the sequel. Or Toy Story 4. But yeah, that is a completely other episode. My gosh. Were y'all okay with the fact that Baymax, were you okay with how Baymax was lost in that dimension and then came back, quote unquote, when Hero rebuilt him? Or would you have rather have him be lost forever?
It would have made
it's almost as if that sacrifice didn't matter.
Exactly. It would have made the sacrifice that much more important and endearing and, you know, just crucial to Hero, and he would just forever be grateful. But poor Hero, we can't have him lose two of his, you know, this is like his surrogate brother, kind of.
He has left of his brother, too.
But it makes...
Yeah, it's like an extension of Tadashi.
But it makes sense that he was able to come back, you know, considering this is about science. And as long as you had the chip, which I'm sure there probably was, he made a copy somewhere. So it's not like he had to give him the actual chip. But it was just a cute gesture that, like, oh, I have this and I can recreate him and he's back.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember what movie it reminded me of where something is gone and then it just comes back at the end and it, like, smiles. I don't know.
No, I totally, there's a...
I feel like it's an animated film that does
this.
It's
a movie.
Well, speaking of animated films, like, comparatively speaking, I felt like the loss of Baymax and then rebuilding him, like, 5 minutes afterwards, it didn't even compare to when we lost Stoic the Vast in How to Train Your Dragon 2. That was devastating.
Yes.
And that film was a lot more mature because, great, now Hiccup has to lead and live without that, like, that anchor in his life, you know? But he did gain another parent in the process.
I will say, though, that I teared up more in this one than I did in How to Train Your Dragon.
Really?
I disagree. Yeah. I don't disagree with.
I disagree that you did not tear up.
I think you're lying, Chelsea.
No, I know. Like, there were, I think it was just, I don't know. I think there was just parts where you just, because Tadashi was such, like, like I said earlier before, like, he's just that whole person. He was everything that you would want in a best friend, everything you would want in a brother, everything you would want in somebody to be around, and just giving everything. Stoic the Vast, he was gruff and he was a personality, like, he was a real person, like, but I don't know. I think maybe it's just in the way that they did it. I don't know. They milked it was what they did. They just milked this sucker as hard as they could, and they got it out of me. I cried more. Right, I've been turned into a cow. Can I go home?
Yes, you're excused. Anyone else? All right. Anything else on Baymax? I thought he was adorable, but I think they overplayed him a little bit. But, of course, they have to because they need to rope in the captive audience, a.k.a. families. That's my final word on Baymax. I guess I'm happy that he's coming back. I would have really liked it better, though, if they had lost him forever and then he comes back out of that dimension in another film.
Uh-huh. Ooh.
Possibly as evil anti-Baymax.
One thing that I kind of thought was strange about Hero is Hero basically is the brain of the organization. He's sort of like the center.
Yeah.
And so he creates everybody's armor and their super suits and even one for him and one for Baymax. But everyone else has really, well, like Fred has these jumping powers. He has all these abilities and Baymax has wings and he has blasters and whatever. And then Hiro has nothing, at least nothing that we know of. And I thought that was kind of like why he was so dependent on Baymax that it just seemed bizarre to me that he didn't like self, he didn't build anything for himself just in case, you know, the robot who isn't perfect yet makes some mistakes or whatever, would get lost or would get destroyed. Why he can't even, Hiro can't fly.
It's not like he can do everything. Like he's
can't do everything.
He doesn't have wings or fly.
Well, he should have just made himself a mini version of Baymax.
Falling with style. That's what he can do. All right. Consider this, Morgan.
Okay.
So I was just watching, there's a really good, if you like video games like me, there's a YouTube series called Extra Credits, and they're really good. They go really, they talk about like game mechanics and story and everything, and they're really good, but they talked about the difference between Japanese role-playing games and, Japanese games and American-made games. And I, in Japanese, like, anime and like games and like RPGs, your robot or like your weapon is a part of you. It's not really something that you like grab out of your holster, shoot until it, you have no ammo, and then you discard it for another one, like in American games.
Yeah.
And so I think they were really trying to push that kind of Japanese pop culture, or anime, trope of a robot or a powerful machine being an extension. Yeah, right? Being an extension or like a really solid companion of the human character.
It's true.
And that's why I think Hiro's power is just to connect with Baymax and be an unstoppable team.
Mm-hmm. That's good points. I like that.
Yeah. So consider that.
I consider them. And I like them. Oh,
thank you for your consideration.
The more you know.
All right, for real this time, anything else on Baymax?
Let's go to the supervillain.
Oh, the supervillain.
Yokai.
Yokai. He is super villain. Hey.
Kabuki man. let me get this straight.
Can you please do that
crazy
video?
Crazy guy in a kabuki mask.
Add that to your list.
Making an army of micro robots. Okay, I will. Yes. You should hear my Stoic the Vast. It's actually really good.
Yes.
All right. Lesson learned from Frozen, no surprise villain reveal will ever top Hans.
No.
I'm sorry. It just cannot be done. It will never be done for the history of animation. Go home. We kiss, we smooch, we carry on, we go home. What do you say? Hey, I did a Hercules quote.
So impressed.
Without being coerced to.
Yeah, I felt like his reveal was... It was like, oh, and even like in that moment when they were going to reveal, Jared was like, it's the brother, which would have been incredible.
Right. It would have totally so not awesome. Made sense, but yes, they would have exactly. made it work. I would have had faith in Disney.
But when it was Callahan, I kind of sat there and I'm like, oh, okay. That makes sense. I don't know why Disney? You had to destroy the building to steal those when basically you had someone at your disposal who could have made you some. And by the way, I'm not quite sure why Hiro just didn't make his own army of microbots to fight your microbots.
All right.
But that's cool.
Well, it's like, you know, those magnetized things where you can like build your own.
Yeah, they're like those beads and stuff that you get at like Klein's Corner.
Exactly.
Like
exactly what I'm talking about. So it's like those, like they just are magnetized to each other, so you can't really...
Except they follow your every command.
Yes, but how do they know whose command to follow? Like, he hasn't totally...
He can just build new ones on different frequency.
What if he...
Bam.
No, he doesn't have to make a new one. He just has to make a more powerful headband, and that's it.
Ooh, there we go.
That's all he had to do.
That's true.
So you're telling me Honey Lemon, with her purse powers, just needed to say, Hiro, you just need to build a new headband. I can help you. Because she loves clothes.
Like, no, your program's dumb. I'm not going to school. He's like, no, we're going to do this a hard way. I'm going to rope you all into this and risk your lives. Anyway. Okay. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I also was severely disappointed by the big villain reveal. I really wanted it to be Tadashi.
Mm-hmm.
Think of how devastating that would be. All the kids in the theater would be like super confused. Is real.
You know. That's
right, kids. Nothing is real.
That could top maybe Hans.
Yeah,
I know. I don't know.
Then you would never trust a Disney movie every time.
That would have tainted. He could have easily been under mind control or something. Maybe he was being used by a supervillain to just throw. Maybe it was like a robot. Tadashi. Tadashi Tron. Tron Dashi.
Tron Dashi.
Anyway, so Callahan, a.k.a. Kabuki Man, a.k.a. Yokai. I think he was an interesting villain for the following reasons. I will pull a John Lasseter and say what I liked before critiquing. I like that he was driven by revenge, and I'm so glad that they didn't go with Kray. I would have just rolled my eyes if it was that same old, oh, evil industrialist, capitalist, corporate, megalomaniac guy. Oh, he just wants to control the world with technology and make money. I'm so tired of it.
Yeah.
So he was a little bit.
They're good people with money, people.
Yeah.
Someday I want to be one.
On the top of my head, I can't. Yeah. Right. Anyway, moving on. So I like that he was driven by revenge. Granted, the revenge-driven villain is, it's not overused, but it is classical. It's not totally original, but that's fine. And I really think that Yokai's character design was really cool. I mean, he could easily be like a Sith Lord. You know what I mean? And the layout department for Disney Animation did a super good job of doing some like really cool like comic booky angles and dramatic shots with him. You know he like raises his hands and like kind of orchestrates the microbots. You know, and everything's very dynamic and no dialogue.
Like that very awkward silence.
Yeah, I thought I'd lost you guys, but there's also. There's also no dialogue. I love.
Oh, sorry. I was talking this whole time. I was on mute. I was like, why is this awkward? I'm totally.
This isn't awkward. I'm talking here.
All right, continue.
You don't like me?
Continue with what you're doing.
But the no dialogue thing was effective because it kind of gave him like a Darth Maul kind of like Phantom Menace kind of feel. So I did like that.
Yeah.
What did y'all like about Yokai?
I loved his kabuki mask.
The kabuki mask. They should have Ron Paulson. So let me get this straight, man with the kabuki mask.
I love Ron Paulson. Long live Ron Paulson.
Long live Paul Robson. Ever since.
Paul Robson.
That's why I should not try to multitask.
Anti-Ron Paulson.
Robson is my brother.
You know, I know your question was what... you loved about him, but I didn't really love this villain.
Uh-oh.
I had a hard time with his motives. Like, I understood.
Oh, brother.
But why do you have to kill yourself and then act like a bad guy? Why couldn't he just... I know, because he figured out the only way that I can rebuild this is with Hero's microbots. But at the same time...
Can't you just pull a gun on the guy?
Couldn't you just borrow them for an afternoon? Hero would totally not notice. But he had to create way, way, way more, so maybe he would. And just like, oh no, I just made some more for you.
Or maybe he would just be like, just circuiting them out, like just like a couple here, a couple there, two for you, one for me, you know, just kind of like one after one. Oh, they just got lost.
Oh, it could have been like by degrees.
Yeah.
Okay.
By degrees.
Yeah, I just, and then I felt very conflicted with him because I didn't really feel that he was ever that big of a threat.
Right.
He's just like,
ooh, spooky guy.
Yeah, exactly. And then when I found out who he was and his motives for his daughter, then I felt very conflicted when ultimately she saved at the end and he just is like thrust into a cop car and it's like, well, that sucks. You should rethink
your
actions.
That he doesn't ever get to be reunited with his daughter. I did like that. That was sweet, sweet revenge.
Yes, it shows that just because you do bad things for a good, quote, reason, which that was not good.
Doesn't mean that you're at all redeemed.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And he was never redeemed. He was just a nasty, cranky old man who wanted revenge. And here's where we get all these problems again. Again, it's the microbots. I think the microbots were like the thing that I disliked most about this film because his objective, like punishing Kray for his negligence, was sorely disproportionate to the power of the microbots. Like, imagine what he could have done to that city. To the world, even. I mean, he made a bazillion of those things. He's not going to take over the world or anything. All he wants to do is just punish Kray. Like, why not just pull a gun on him? Anyway.
You're all about pulling guns. This is like the third time.
Oh, you know me, down here in Texas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, down here in Texas, we're like Yosemite Sam down here.
I know your side gig is making...
I'm a fucking varmint.
I know your side gig is making some doormats with guns on them, so that's cool.
Oh, yeah, my side business.
I like it.
Almost no emotional connection with Hiro besides being responsible for starting the fire that killed Tadashi. Now, that is a cool moment because it is shocking and tragic to see Hiro so angry that he disables Baymax's medical personality and turns him into a killing machine. That was scary. Like, that made everyone scared of Baymax, and it was kind of like that Iron Giant moment, you know, when you see what he's really capable of. So I liked that conflict. But other than that, like, he just wasn't close enough to Hiro to make him an effective comic book style hero villain. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Peter Parker and then the Osborns, Norman and Harry. They were all close buddies and family friends, and that made the Green Goblin and the other Green Goblin even more tragic.
Yeah.
And then Thor and Loki, even though Marvel's treatment of Thor and Loki is despicable, they're brothers, and there's supposed to be a tragic relationship there. And then you get Captain America versus the Winter Soldier slash Bucky Barnes. They were combat buddies, and it was a huge tragic deal when we found
so
out about
much better,
that.
Like you guys were talking about earlier, had he had the help of him in the beginning to build it,
right? Because then he would have felt even more betrayed. Besides, hey, you're an arsonist who just happened to kill my to kill my brother. Like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to.
Where my brother just happened to die in your arson fire.
Right. I don't want to treat family, the concept of family death, to anything lightly, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Also, there's no cool music for him. Did you ever see Captain America 2?
Yeah.
Every time the Winter Soldier showed up, they had this kind of like Trent Reznor, like kind of Nine Inch Nails sounding musical thing that really got your blood pumping. And then, of course, the Joker's theme music in The Dark Knight. And then, you know, Bane and all that stuff. And so there's a lot of filmmakers that are really good at setting the mood when a villain shows up, but it just wasn't there for this film.
Yeah, the music wasn't as present as in a lot of different movies that I would like to see. I mean, definitely they had like the couple songs that were the bigger songs that they have been promoting a lot more, and those were good. I like those songs, but like you're saying, like the scoring was not my. I've been raised to another level of, like, I just appreciate good scoring.
And they just couldn't burst out into song just once.
No. And the thing is, even a lot of people have been asking me, like, you know, how did it compare to Frozen? How did it compare to Frozen? But to me, Frozen is a musical, and musicals are very different from this type of a movie.
I don't even compare this to Frozen.
Not at all.
Incomparable.
No, not at all. But the scoring of a film, like you were talking about how each one of these characters have their own theme song going on in the background. I didn't notice it. And it wasn't something that stood out as something that I needed to notice.
I noticed the soundtrack only in the fact that I noticed that it was big and booming and epic. Normally it just sort of just goes into the background. I don't pay attention, but this one I did notice that it was there. So to me, that was a win for me.
Okay.
But I didn't necessarily notice any themes. Like, I couldn't hum you any, but I'm sure if I listened to it, I'd be like, oh yeah. And then the only thing that really stood out was the Fall Out Boy song. When I heard that, I was like, ah, it's the song.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Immortals. Yeah, that was cool. There's this funny moment where Hiro gets super frustrated, you know, with everything that's going on. They barely managed to put Baymax, you know, back to normal, and he just leaves, you know, and he has his cathartic moment, and then all his friends come back and they're like, they say something like, hey, shouldn't leave us on an island all alone with no way to get out.
I was always thinking about that, like, he just left them.
That's what I thought too. I'm like, what a jerk. But yeah. You know, it kind of just showed that he really was all for himself and didn't care.
I did like the little transformation that Hiro underwent. I wish they could have pushed it a little further, but I did like that change where he totally snapped because he wanted blood. He wanted revenge, you know? And he realized at the end of the film that he could have turned into Callahan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe Callahan's, you know, fall was even more of a waste than Hiro. But yeah, he realized that he could be a superhero, you know, but not an executioner.
All right, so I guess we can talk about the big final battle. I think the only thing that really stood out to me there is the first battle, they couldn't quite figure out how to work together. They didn't have their powers down. And then the second battle's where everything solidified. And, like, you just got to see it from a different angle. And then they were all able to escape at exactly the same time.
Yay. Yeah. I kind of have a beef with movies that are like, all right, we're having a high stakes thing here in a giant environment that looks like a combat arena. Looks like you can really work for a final battle. Yeah. Oh, I'm making this huge technology that's going to suck people into space if we're not careful. I hope a supervillain doesn't come get us. Woo! You know? So Cray's like, hey, let me just have this giant ribbon cutting ceremony, this giant, you know, Coliseum shaped building and stuff. Yeah, everything's perfectly set up. Anyway, sorry, I don't want people to think that I'm like hating on this movie, but I guess I just chuckled cynically there. maybe I'm getting too cynical. But anyway, I did like the final battle because they go into the interdimensional portal. I saw it and I was like, oh, they have to go in.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go in, and they do it. It was awesome. Such a beautiful.
That was
pretty. Well, the visual and special effects for this film were just perfect. Because there's the dimension, and then there's Honey Lemon's, like, kind of gooey, smoky things, you know, that she throws.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Pokemon Snap. They're like those pester ball things that you throw at Pokemon. And they're like, hey!
That's awesome.
But, like, fighting with all those microbots, it was, you know, with the Hyperion engine, it is possible now. But it's just a technical achievement, final battle. And I like the moment where Hiro inspires them to think outside the box. Once again, Hiro's the brains of the group and whatever. But I liked Gogo Chamago. She just spins super fast out of the microbot prison that she's in. That was pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Wasabi lets his wild kind of brutal side show through a little bit. And then Fred's just like, oh, that's right. I'm in a suit.
Oh, yeah. My arms. They don't stretch anymore. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a good one. See, that's something I really liked about this movie. Like, there were a couple, like, two times, possibly three, where I got, like, really emotional, where I felt, like, connected. And I got emotional. There was a little bit of tearing. And then there were a bunch of times where I was just laughing out loud. And mm-hmm. I was just like, that is hilarious. That is hilarious. That is hilarious. Hilarious. And so I think for that cause, I gave it such a high score because it did do a really good balance of the two. And for me, I really didn't feel like I was waiting around for the next thing to happen. I've heard other people say that there was like one spot in the middle where it kind of got slow, but I didn't feel that. I felt like everything was pretty cohesive. They, as far as they followed the rules in the story. And so I felt like this was a good all around, not much to improve on story.
All right. Well, I think that's a good ending point for like rounding everything up with our like final thoughts on our ratings. What do you guys say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Chelsea, will you stay with your 5-star rating? Final answer. Is that your final answer?
You know, now that, like I said, like now that we've like shown all these different things, I'm like, you know what? But then I look at all the other movies, and yeah, I've had differences with, even though there have been 5-star movies in my head, like, yeah, that could have been different, but I still give it 5, yeah. It was one that I could watch over. I believe that this would have a lot of good replay value for me, and if okay. I were a kid, you better believe this would have great replay value for me.
Yeah.
So I loved this movie. Leaving the theater, I was just all smiles. I was laughing throughout. I loved the characters. And I was like so, you know, because we cover animation, I was just so excited for other people to see this movie mm-hmm. too, so they could just know how good it is. And just on a completely different level than Frozen. I know people are trying to make the comparisons, but I don't make the comparison
don't
at
even
all.
Try.
It's different genres. It's different types of films. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's nothing to compare. Like, stop it. So, I loved Baymax way more than I thought I was going to. You know, he seemed a little oversaturated from the trailers, sort of like Olaf syndrome, but he really ended up, almost
so much
stealing the
Olaf.
Show. He really ended up almost stealing the show. I still think Fred was just the winner all around. I loved the cast of characters. I thought it was good. I thought it was too fast at the beginning. Others don't think that way. But really, once it started getting going, I just loved everything that I saw. So I'm going to give it 4.5 stars.
Excellent. All right. I guess it comes down to me. When I started the podcast, when I started recording, I didn't know if I was going to give it 3.5 stars or 4 stars. And then I thought maybe I could pull a Myra because it's kind of a special episode and do 3.75 stars. All right. My final answer is 4.0 stars. Nothing more, nothing less. I still think Tangled is the best out of the 4 CG films. you know, the big main ones that have been. And it's really hard. It's set such a high bar, but you just can't beat Tangled, in my opinion. Loved it. I really got it handed to the animation crew for this film. My gosh, such awesome animation. And having had the experience of animating a short film recently that's, you know, full CG and all that stuff, I realized how super hard it is. So Disney animators are just amazing talent, super, super cool. And then the effects and like the lighting and the rendering was just, it was just beautiful. This is a beautiful looking film. And if you're a fan of animation, you just gotta recognize the technical achievements of this film. You know, the all powerful Hyperion engine. I did have problems with the story, as we discussed. I don't want anybody to think that I'm like the super cynical guy, or what did that one guy call me on a YouTube video? Actually, I can't say because there's preschool toys around. But I don't want anybody to think that I'm like cynical or that I'm trying to be like overcritical. It's just because it's Disney. But I did have some qualms with the story. But overall, I came out of the theater smiling and laughing. And I would definitely watch it again, and just to experience again how beautiful and how awesome a world that Disney created. I think this shows Disney's like mature storytelling side even more than Wreck-It Ralph. Like, it was a sci-fi superhero movie without polarizing the audience, and it's something I think everyone will enjoy, and I certainly did.
Into our listener Twitter question, also voicemail. So let's take a look. Okay, so our listener Twitter question today was, what was your favorite moment of Big Hero 6? And we have Andrew Thomas, and he says, when Baymax comes back at the end. Frank says, the first flying sequence with Hero and Baymax. Tyler says, my favorite scenes were, one, Hero meeting his brother's friends, the team trying out their super suits, Baymax emotional scene. Nicole says, Harry Baby, or ba-ba-la-la-la. That was a great, great joke. Oh my gosh. And then Brianna says, drunk Baymax. The Walrus says, the whole movie. Catherine says,
the Walrus has spoken.
Yeah. Catherine says, the car chase scene, especially when Wasabi stopped at the red light, but also when Hero found Baymax's chip at the end. JK Ricky, and he says, the impactful death of Hero's brother, the most unexpected and interesting aspect of the film. Milan Harrison says, the emotional scene at the end of the film with Hero and Baymax. I am satisfied with my care. Oh,
yeah, that's a good one.
That was a good moment.
Can I do a few?
Yeah, go.
Here's one from, C-Rose. Anyway, not exactly favorite, but when Tadashi hits Hero for bot fighting on the scooter, I thought it was a nice touch. That was good. It was kind of a brotherly thing. Mika Hirsch says, the part after the credits that everyone else always misses. I didn't miss it. A true Marvel fan stays after the credits. Daniel Castellan, duh, Fred's amazing song. Is there a song that I'm forgetting?
Yeah, when he's like, this is our theme song.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
Oh, that's right. With a magic amulet. That's right.
I loved how it just kept getting like more and more crazy and unrealistic.
And unrealistic doesn't have anything to do with reality.
Oh, he was so good. I want that as my screen, as my ringtone.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so Fred's amazing song. And then Gianna Lee says, Tadashi rescues Hero from the bot fight when Hero and Baymax do a fist bump. How Hero becomes his brother by the end of the film. Aw. Ben Rose, my man, he says, spoilers, when Hero gets Baymax to kill Callahan and the rest of the team tries to stop him. So tense and quite scary. Shelby S. had something to say about that. Yeah, I was scared even though I know it wasn't really Baymax. And the fear on Callahan's face hurt me. That was a pretty interesting part. That's a good point. And then, let's see, Jacqueline Cullen, tough. Probably Hero and Baymax's first flight, but the emotional punch of Hero and Baymax post-island fight is really good. Ben continues, I liked how Honey was the one to put the chip back in because I felt like she didn't do as much as she should have.
All right.
Kimberly Hayner says, when Hero and Baymax are sitting on the balloon and Bay asks if he was satisfied and Hero freaked, it showed how close Hero got to him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cute.
Aw.
Then we got Corazon, a.k.a. Janice Marie. Fred singing his version of Charlie's Angels entitled Fred's Angel. Okay, that's what it, that's right. It was like a parody of Charlie's Angels.
It was all about Fred, even though Fred wasn't like the leader, clearly.
Fred's Angels, right. Cool.
All right, so we have 4 voicemails and 1 email. I did a very last-minute call. It was a super busy day, and I forgot to let people know that, hey, by the way, we're not doing Ratatouille. We're actually going to be doing Big Hero 6 in the meantime. And people were totally on the ball, and they sent us their voicemail review, so let's go check it out. First one is from August.
Big Hero 6 is one of the best superhero movies ever made. It's full of fun and has a lot of heart. It's on par with The Incredibles. I give it 4 stars. Go see it now.
I like that. That was a very short, quick-to-the-point review, and it had a challenge. Go see it now.
Hello, Rotoscopers. I saw your call to action on Twitter looking for Big Hero 6 reviews, and, well, I just saw this movie yesterday, and I would love to share my opinion with you. Overall, this movie was fantastic. Beautiful visuals, wonderful characters, and a really solid plot. Oh, wow, what a satisfying movie. I'd give it a grade A. I especially loved the sibling relationship between Tadashi and Hiro. And Baymax, well, obviously a scene stealer. I can't wait to meet a Baymax at Disneyland soon. But overall, when I left the movie theater, I wasn't feeling particularly amazed for some reason. I don't know if it's because of superhero fatigue, or I've kind of seen more or less the same in some other animated movies. That doesn't really detract from my enjoyment of Big Hero 6, though. Heck, I'd love to see more of these characters in the future, whether a sequel or maybe a spin-off show. What do you guys think? Anyways, thanks for letting me share my opinion. Keep up the great work, and you guys rock. Here's a fist bump. Ba-la-la-la-la-la.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. Awesome. Thanks for sending in your voicemail. And yes, I completely agree. I would love to see these characters again. And I think that's a huge sign about how well they did, what a great job they did at creating just a cast of characters that you've grown to love in such a short amount of time. Our next one is from Bree.
Hi, my name's Bree Gallagher. I actually saw the movie back on October 27th. So it was really hard for me for that like week and a half to kind of keep everything in. Especially with the drunk Baymax health. God, I can't even re-quote it. Anyway, I really, really love the movie, especially Disney's new Hyperion renderer. I'm sorry, I'm kind of in the nerdy things. But, of course, the part that I like the most is the relationship of Hero and Baymax. My only minor complaint is I would have liked to see the team have a little bit more action in the film, and outside of the team, maybe Aunt Cass, because I really felt like you have Maya Rudolph, and I really felt that her talents were underutilized, but at the end of the day, the story is still the story of Hero and Baymax, and Hero getting over the loss of Tadashi, but I really wouldn't be surprised if Disney, in like a year and a half, maybe 2 years, has a Big Hero 6 series on Disney XD or something like that, especially since a lot of the voice actors, well, in particular T.J. Miller, is already on Gravity Falls in Disney XD, and most of the voice actors in the film have television experience, so it would be very probable that they would, if they were to ever do their characters again, to get them back on the show. So I really enjoyed the movie, and I'm going to kind of cut this off because I want to allow other listeners to give their feedback. So thanks for listening. Toodles.
Thanks, Bree. Here, I have a question.
Yes.
Do you guys think it would be more beneficial for them to do like a theatrical release or just to do like a TV series with these things?
I'm kind of leaning towards TV series. Like, it just seems
like, she made a good point about how they all have TV experience and mm-hmm. something that totally could be right up their alley. And, like,
yeah,
a TV series is normally, like, the cheap route that, like, whatever, we'll just, you know, make a spinoff a TV series about it. But this just seems so appropriate because then we can see their different adventures. And comic books have issues after issues after issues, so.
Jimmy?
You can't continue and I will. Okay.
I agree. Plus, what else does Disney TV have?
Yeah, they've kind of lost a lot of things.
Jake the Pirate?
But, I mean, there's also, for example, looking at DreamWorks, how they've had a really good relationship with Netflix, and they've been creating a lot of these.
Oh, they got the
dragons. Yeah, they don't really sell to any networks, but they sell to Netflix. I don't know. I'm wondering, like, what Disney is going to be doing. I think they're missing the boat, not jumping in and doing a lot more with Netflix, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Sometimes outlets like Netflix have, like, exclusive deals, but not really. I don't know. But I think I would like to see a TV series and then a follow-up sequel, like, theatrical release.
Sort of like what DreamWorks did with Riders of Berk.
Dragons?
Mm-hmm.
Burke, Dad. Dragons and Burke. Yeah.
All right. Our next one is from Dylan. Let's listen to what he has to say.
Howdy, guys. This is Highside DiBarenzu from Twitter. And Big Hero 6. What can I say about Big Hero 6 other than the fact that it is an awesome little film? In all honesty, it is probably one of the better Disney flicks of this generation. And if I'm perfectly honest, better than Frozen. The film is packed with heart, packed with emotion. It's a hodgepodge of Japanese and American subcultures. And, in all honesty, if you haven't seen it yet, please do. It's fantastic. And I also gotta say, I want a Baymax. Baymax and Hero have snuck their way into my Disney favorites list ever since watching the film last Saturday. Anyways, hello, fellow rotoscopers. Later.
Ah, yes. Fellow rotoscopers. We are fellows. The fellowship of the rotos.
It's true. Anyone
can be a rotoscoper.
Anyone who's an animation addict is a rotoscoper. They are
one and the same.
Oh, yes, everyone. Like, start referring to yourselves as rotoscopers now. We are all one. Cue music from Lightning 2.
If we hold on together. Harmony.
I was gonna do that. We are one. Do.
We can throw back duo again, because we're a duo. A duo from last
week.
Wow,
we have really gone on a tangent.
Oh, good times.
So, our last review is an email, and it's from Daniel C. So I will go ahead and read this. It says, "Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Daniel, or as people on the website know, Aqua Pyro. Ooh, I've been a big fan of animation since I was born, and I love that there is a high-quality podcast that discusses animated films as a film, not a cartoon. I recently saw Big Hero 6 at an advanced screening with my friends, and they witnessed something that they had never seen, me crying. During Tadashi's death, I became so emotional that I had to get up and walk out of the theater. Luckily, my friends understood my emotions. Like I said on the site, my older brother is in the military making healthcare robots and fixing medical equipment. And we finished the movie, and I went back to watch it again immediately after because we missed about 20 minutes of the film. Anyway, my thoughts on Big Hero 6. I thought it was an incredible film. The animation in this film is incredible, with scenes that are just simply breathtaking. The animation rendering is amazing with the help of Hyperion and Denizen. The fact that this really is the first Marvel/Disney film is a risk that truly paid off. The characters are so diverse and likable that if you took them out of the film and put them in our world, there really is someone just like one of the six. Baymax is really the biggest breakout character Disney has ever made. He displays so much emotion with so little features. He really does steal the show. And as I said before, the rest of the cast really does a great job showing emotion and bonding. If there are only a couple of gripes with the film, much like any Marvel film, with the villain as Callahan is weak. But as Yokai, he's awesome. But that is such a little complaint that really doesn't affect the film. This is one of the few films where I would like to see a sequel, since like many films, it's an origin story. But one done right. The reason why I appreciate this film a lot more than The Incredibles is because while they are a family of supers, they still had superpowers. Big Hero 6 gave the six technology to give them powers. Plus the fact that the first time that they attacked as a team is really true. The first fight is always a disaster for the team. It's not perfect. It makes the characters much more real and connected. Big Big Hero 6 is a huge risk that paid off. It combined the action of Marvel, the heart of Disney, and the comedy of both. It's a great addition to the Disney revival, and I cannot wait to see what we have in store for Zootopia and Moana. I give it a 9 out of 10. Daniel C.
Huh. Well said, well said.
Very well said.
You know, one thing we never did in this whole episode is I don't think we ever compared it once to The Incredibles.
Mm-mm. I didn't feel that it was the same.
Maybe we should have one of our roto writers, if they feel so inclined, write about a compare and contrast.
Mm-hmm.
And if they even should be compared. Because I think we all agree that Big Hero 6, you can't even compare it to Frozen.
No.
Or Wreck-It Ralph.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
But maybe other superhero films. That includes The Incredibles. Los Increíbles. Thank you, Daniel. That was a very, very good little review.
All right, so that is all for our episode of Big Hero 6, reviewing and discussing the film. Ultimately, I think all of us really, really enjoyed this film, and so I don't want to give that impression from,
agreed,
you know, we were nitpicking some things here and there and just kind of breaking it down and talking. That's what we do in this podcast. But overall, for me, I did give it 5.5 stars. 5.5?
Wow.
Holy cow!
I gave this film 4.5 stars, and I am just, you know, bubbling over about this film and so excited. Like, Disney Animation is really on a roll, and it's exciting to see them back because they really were the originators of feature length films, and they've had such a roller coaster over the years, and I'm glad to see that we are witnessing kind of one of the peaks of Disney Animation and not the valleys.
Yeah. Continuously innovating and discovering new ways of doing things. Go Disney.
All right, for those that are listening to this episode, be sure to use the hashtag AnimAddicts on Twitter and the hashtag AnimAddicts80. Wow, 80, guys. We're into the 80s. We're getting
holy
old.
Holy cow, 80 episodes.
Uh-huh. That
so
happened.
Old. Yeah.
For show notes, visit rotoscopers.com/80. You can also find us on Hypable and Animated Views. Subscribe to us in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, basically anywhere great podcasts are found. And of course, if you subscribe to us on iTunes, we love that. Please leave us a review, because that's way other people, fellow rotoscopers like you, can find the show. If you have an email and you'd like to let us know, send us an email at contact@rotoscopers.com. We do have a backlog. Remember a few episodes ago, I'm like, we've caught up. Wow, everyone sent in a bunch of emails, and we have not caught up. So the best way to actually the best way to get on the show is to send us a voicemail, because we always put voicemails on the most recent episode because we just – they're easier to play. They're great. So you can send us a voicemail at rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can call us on your phone at 406-646-6575. Don't forget to use our Amazon and affiliate links. Those are in the show notes. It's one way that you can easily support the show just by doing the normal shopping that you would. I know that Christmas and the holidays are coming up and Black Friday. So if you're going to be doing any of those shopping on Amazon, use our link. We love when you do. Also, we still have a few Roto shirts. You can buy those at rotoscopers.com. They're amazing. And this is limited run. So we're not going to be doing this design ever again. So you definitely want to check it out.
Speaking of Black Friday and t-shirts, we are also going to be having a Black Friday sale for t-shirts one day only. We are just pulling out all the stops for you guys. If you have been waiting to get your Rotoscopers t-shirt, this is going to be the day. We are going to be dropping t-shirts from $20 down to $12 with $3 shipping. And we have a selection of signed t-shirts by all three of us. Now, this is really impressive because none of us have ever been in the same room together. So these shirts have been making, you know, the traveling shirts, you know, but they all have been signed by each one of us. So those are going to be $16 signed. And so once again, this is going to be one day only. Get on the website, go to rotoscopers.com/store, and the coupon code will be Black Friday. And like I said, you don't want to miss this. So mark your calendars. Definitely this is going to be the thing to do. One little caveat to that is that I do have all of the t-shirts in my possession, but I'm going to be traveling right after Thanksgiving, and so I'm not going to be back until about the 9th. So basically don't expect the t-shirts until after about the 15th of December, but we will definitely try to get them in for Christmas. Also, we have found a much better way for international shipping as well, so that one has been dropped significantly. So once again, Black Friday is your day. We have a very limited amount of t-shirts, but do not let this go by without you getting your Rotoscopers t-shirt.
I want to say something about the Rotoscoper t-shirt. I love my Roto shirt. I wear it. I don't even wash it. I wear it front, and then I turn it to the back, and then I turn it inside out, and then I wear it front, and then back.
That is perfect. And on that note, our next episode is going to be the continuation of the Rats and Mice series, finally. We are going to be doing Ratatouille. Sorry for the false impression that I gave last episode that we were going to do that this episode.
We promise Ratatouille, and then Big Hero 6 happened. Hey, what are you going to do, folks?
You can find us all online. I'm Morgan Stradling on Twitter. Chelsea's at Chelsea Robson on Twitter, and ChelseaRobson.com will take you to her Facebook page. Mason is at MasonSMTX on Twitter, as well as MasonSmithPortfolio.com.
Please hire me. I'm really good.
He's awesome.
Oh, but hey, before we go, I've been kind of remiss in mentioning that we are coming up on the year end. Can we believe it? Another year at Comic-Con.
Yeah, this will be mid-November. So, yeah, we're going to start we're going to start getting ready for the best of 2014 episode.
Yeah, baby. So all year long, I've been compiling different quotes and different funny things that have happened, but I'm sure I didn't get all of them. So please send us an email. If you want us to go to contact@rotoscopers, you can send us an email there and make sure to let us know, like, the episode, like, different parts. If you happen to be listening to an episode and you're like, oh my gosh, at 26 minutes and 33 seconds was the best moment ever, please put that in the best of 2014 episode. We can do that. So make sure to send that. We are accepting voicemails now for the best of 2014 episode. This is going to be mostly voicemails. It's mostly you guys. So make a statement. Tell us what you think. Let us know. The best part about doing the podcast is really getting to hear from all of you guys. I mean, please, we want to hear you. We love hearing your voices. We love making, like, that's basically how we know that we have made friends. Head on over to rotoscopers.com/voicemails, and you will be able to send us yours. Also, we are going to be doing the Rotoscopers Awards. Woohoo! This is so much better than the Academy Awards, because this is just the Rotoscopers Awards.
Remember when Frozen won everything last year?
I know. But the thing is, like, we were so polarized on Frozen last year. So, yeah. But, like, this year, I really believe that this year is going to have a lot more variety, because there were so many good movies that came out this year. I mean, How to Train Your Dragon 2 stole my heart in so many ways. And then you have Book of Life, had so many great things about it. Obviously, Lego Movie, come on. I mean, there's just so many. So I want you guys to really think about it. Go through. We're actually having a couple articles on the website that are kind of going over those. And through those articles, we're going to be kind of compiling lists and creating another, just like last year, how we did votes. And we're going to end up voting on what you guys thought was your best score, best
sidekick, best main protagonist, basically best anime, lots of stuff. So stay tuned to the website for that, and it will be in the show notes.
Yes.
So until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
That is what it's
cannot
called
wait
in Japan, though.
Beamasta.
Who Beamasta?
Big Ol' Hero 6.
Talk about racist.
No. You just do your best to... There is nothing wrong with impersonations.
You know what? I don't get why... It's an homage to Japanese culture. I don't get why it's racist to call him Wasabi No Ginger, but it's not racist to just call him Wasabi. That's like, hey, this is my Mexican friend, Tabasco. You know? It's like, hi, I'm from Germany. My name is Frankfurt. Nice to meet you. Frankfurt Mustard Schweiden. Heigen Flargen Jargen. Now he's just a Viking.
They're cooler in San Francisco with stuff like that.
I guess
they're not so PC, which is the way we should be.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
PC is lame-y.
Yeah. I basically... Jimmy! No! Hold on 2 seconds. No! Go out!
Way to ruin the podcast, Jimmy.
Yeah, seriously.
He's trying to...
Jimmy, no!
He's trying to steal a pillow. So, like, it's twice the size as him. And he's pulling it.
You've got
slowly.
A little bandit.
Yeah. Oh, he loves to steal socks and clothes.
I saw that Instagram video of him running around the backyard with like a plastic bag. Yeah. And was like so proud of himself.
Yeah. So imagine that. But 2 days ago, him with basketball shorts, running in circles with basketball shorts.
The items are getting bigger.
My favorite is when it gets
crime
stuck in the doggy door. And it's stuck in the doggy door. And then he can't come back through the doggy door because he's like, ah, it's blocked. I don't know what to do. It's funny. Oh. Anyways, let me go back to what I was talking about. Blooper.
All right. Are you guys on mute or something?
Sorry, I had to fix something really quick. And so I was on mute.
Oh, no problem.
Jimmy!
Yeah, naughty. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Just reminds me of Pokemon Snap.
Foolish mortals. Pokemon Snap. Oh, it's a good one.
Wasn't that the coolest?
I love that game. The Mew level at the very end.
Oh, impossible.
So good.
You have to be a true Pokemon photography master.
What a bizarre game. Thinking of it.
Yeah, it was like the predecessor to Fatal Frame. I don't know if you ever played that game.
Mm-mm.
It's like where you take pictures of ghosts to get rid of them. Nice. But in that one, it's like, hey, I'm going to throw an apple at this Charmeleon, and it's going to fall in a pit of lava and come out as Charizard. It's going to breathe fire at me, but nothing's going to happen to me. I'm just going to take pictures of it.
Yeah. What a bizarre... I mean, really, that's how it evolves, huh? It wasn't like that in the game. That's
yeah,
for
abuse
sure.
Your Pokemon to evolve it. Anyway. Or long live Hyperion. All hail Hyperion.